I like what we did to Sadaf there. It was kind of like at the Oscars when they play you off, you know, when your acceptance speech goes too long. That was really good. If we never met, my name is Wes. I'm our lead pastor here at Crossbridge. I'm really happy you've joined us here today. And today is an exciting day because we're starting off talking about love and this idea of love. I should say we're really diving in. Some of you got those pink cards last week. We've got some extras of those at the Hub. Every day we ask you to do two things. I ask you to pray, God, help me know your love for me and grow in my love for others. And then we also asked you to kind of recite aloud the actual description that the Bible gives us of what love is. And so over the summer, we're just going to take a look at that idea of love together this morning. We're actually going to take a look at the different qualities that Scripture gives us about what love is and see how that might apply into our lives. And so I'm looking forward to us doing that together. As we start today, I want to tell you a story about something that happened to me relatively recently. My wife and I have started meeting with a financial advisor, and this financial advisor was recommended to us by one of my best friends who still lives in Indiana, where we moved from when we moved to Tallahassee. And we were meeting with him, obviously, since he lives in Indiana. We don't actually physically meet. We meet with one of those teleconference kind of programs, you know, Skyping and that kind of thing. And so on this particular morning, as I'm walking out the door, I'm in a rush. I'm like trying to go to a meeting or something. And my wife is going to be meeting, and I will be meeting with a financial advisor today. It's our first big, like, we're talking through the nuts and bolts of like insurance and how much we're going to pay and what kind of policies we need and all this kind of stuff. And we're going to be in separate spaces when we have the meeting. So my wife is going to have to like dial into the meeting for the first time all by herself. And so I walk in, I just want to give my wife a kiss goodbye as I'm getting ready to leave in the morning, and she starts asking me a bunch of questions about the meeting. So like, what are we going to talk about in the meeting? What do you think we're going to need in the meeting? You know, what kind of insurance are we going to get in the meeting? Like, I don't know, honey, we're going to have to go to the meeting, you know, to find that out, you know? And I'm like kind of communicating that to every, I don't know, I can't wait till the meeting when we find that out, you know, I'm trying to communicate that. And then it starts to turn into questions about the program we're going to use to call into the meeting, right? Like, how do I use the app? What's the name of the app? You know, what's the meeting location for the app? You know, can I do the app on my phone? Do I need a computer for the app? You know, what kind of an internet connection do I need for the app? You know, all these kind of things. And at that point, I did the thing that every husband, I'm sure, has done, where it's like, you know, we're done here. Right? So it's like, figure it out. See you later, you know. And I went to give her a kiss, and surprisingly, it was a frosty reception on the kiss. I don't really understand why. And so I walked out, and later on that evening, my wife made it known in no uncertain terms, please don't do that again, because I didn't really appreciate that. And the reason, she's totally right, because I did not act lovingly toward my spouse. And the reason I didn't act lovingly toward my spouse is because when Paul, the guy who writes 1 Corinthians' description of love, talks about love, the very first thing he leads off with is he says, love is, let's just say this word together, patient. Come on, Paul. You know, like, what are you doing? You're trying to make my day a misery? You know, like, love is patient. Who's got time to be patient, you know? And Paul's answer is, people who love people have time to be patient and make a way to be patient. Here's my working definition. I just got to tell you, you're going to really hate this sermon today, okay? I just got to warn you, okay? Because it's really hard for all of us, I think. But here's my working definition for patience for us today. Patience is going at their pace with grace, okay? Patience is going at their pace with grace, okay? Driving along, rush hour traffic, left lane. Seems like all the people in the right lane, the non-passing lane, are moving faster than the people in the passing lane. Why is that happening? Because Georgia license plate in front of me, we're 10 below the speed limit. You know, that's at least how I feel, right? But you know what? Not going to get angry. We're going to go at their pace with grace, right? Standing in line at the grocery store, the convenience store, McDonald's, wherever it is you are, right? And there's like a line of three or four people, and the person in front of you, they get to the front of the line. It's like for the first time they've ever done the transaction before. And at the end, they're like, oh, you mean we pay at the end? Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I got to get my purse out. You know, oh, I can never find anything in this thing. You know, oh, where's my credit card? I don't know. That would have been a great question to figure out 7 minutes ago, you know, or whenever you could, right? But you know what? Go at their pace with grace, right? My kid, we've talked about this one time or two times or 22 times, actually, about the room. I see her trying. I see her working. I see her doing your best, but not getting there, right? Okay, honey, I know there was a football game on, right? I know Florida State was playing. I also know I said no shortage of 79 times, please get milk at the store, okay? And you came home with Diet Sunkist. I'm not really sure how that happened, okay? But you know what? Their pace with grace. Now, here's the thing you're really going to hate, and because I've hated it all week, so now you get to hate it too, okay? If patience is part of love, here's what that means. Every annoyance is an opportunity for love. If love is patient, what that means is every annoyance, every inconvenience is an opportunity to love, because every annoyance is an opportunity for me to demonstrate and display patience, okay? And if we, as followers of Jesus, want to live out love, which is what marks us as followers of Jesus, what we must understand is that if love is patient, what that means is every annoyance is an opportunity for us to love. Okay, now today, I want to tell us a story from the Bible, and it's a story about Jesus and his disciples. And I just need to warn you right up that this story is not about patience, okay? That's not the main theme of the story. But it's one of about two dozen or so stories that we can look at in the Bible where Jesus demonstrates patience with people, primarily with his disciples especially. And Jesus is going to demonstrate, because what we learned last week is that Jesus is basically love with skin on. Okay, that Jesus is the perfect embodiment of love. That if we want to see what love looks like, and specifically, if we want to see what each aspect or quality of love looks like, that we can look at the life of Jesus, because Jesus is going to perfectly embody each and every one of those qualities. And so Jesus does so here in a kind of humorous little story that we're going to learn from one of Jesus' first century followers named Mark. And Mark records this story for us. Okay, here's how he begins. He says, "During those days, another large crowd gathered, and since they had nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said," Jesus is teaching, he calls folks around, and he says, "I have compassion for these people because they have already been with me for 3 days and they have nothing to eat. If I send them home hungry, they'll collapse on the way because some of them have come a long distance." Okay, you got to keep in mind, this is 2,000 years ago. You couldn't just stop off at, you know, some gas station. You couldn't go to Publix. You couldn't go wherever it is, okay? Like, there was nothing, you know? Like they were far away from everything. And so his disciples answered Jesus, and they said, "Jesus, where in this remote place is anyone going to be able to get enough bread to feed them, these 4,000 people?" Now, let's just stop here. That seems like a really innocent question, right? That seems like a really honest question, except it's the dumbest question imaginable, and let me tell you why. If you read Mark chapter 6, so we're talking like weeks, maybe months before this, Jesus did a miracle where there are 5,000 people, and some little kid comes up and says, "Hey, Jesus, I got 3 loaves of bread," or whatever it was, "and a couple of fish. Can you use these to feed this whole big crowd, you know?" And that's where we'd be like, "Oh, how cute." But no, we can't actually. Thank you for trying, right? But Jesus actually takes this kid's bread and fish, and he does this miracle where he's able to feed this entire crowd of 5,000 people. And what happens is when Jesus, he like prays for this food, and what happens is he doesn't pray and it doesn't just go like boom, you know, there's like 5,000 loaves of bread or something like that. What Jesus does is he actually hands out this food to his disciples, and it apparently just keeps like magically reappearing or something as they serve all these people who are gathered in different groups. So it wasn't just that Jesus did a miracle with a large group of people where he fed them. He actually used his disciples as the front line to accomplish the miracle, okay? These 12 men have the memory of a goldfish right now, okay? They can't remember anything that Jesus has just done for them. But Jesus doesn't get angry, okay? They continue on. They ask a very simple question. He says, "How many loaves do you have?" Jesus asked. 7, they answered. Now, we would pass over this detail, but this is another annoyance for Jesus, okay? Because Jesus, 2 chapters earlier, apparently the disciples just forgot about what happened 2 chapters ago in Mark. Jesus earlier was trying to make a point to the disciples about God's ability to provide for them at all times, in all places, anywhere they go. And Jesus gives his disciples, parents, tell me if this sounds familiar, he gave them very explicit instructions on what they should take and should not take for their journey. And here were Jesus' instructions 2 chapters earlier. He said to his disciples, "Take nothing for the journey except for a staff." Let's just read these two words together. No bread. And yet, here we are with bread. Now, how that, I was holding it for a friend, Jesus, I swear, yeah, I promise, okay? You know, no bread, no bag, you know, nothing for your journey, okay? And yet, here the disciples stand with not just one loaf of bread, seven, okay? Jesus caught them, red-handed. Okay, so let's just review. No memory and no recollection of Jesus' amazing power to do stuff, and explicitly disobeying his instructions. Now, how would you respond in this moment? I'll tell you how I would respond. My shoulders would get a little bit tight, and my chest would get a little bit more raised. And you would notice I wouldn't have a lot of hilarious anecdotes I'm sharing with you in that moment, right? My tone would get a little curt, you know, get a little, you know, a little short, okay? But not Jesus. You know why? Because Jesus is committed to going at his disciples' pace with grace. Because Jesus is patient. Because Jesus is loving. And so here's how the story plays out. As he told the crowd to sit down on the ground, and when he had taken the seven loaves, the seven illegal loaves, and given thanks, he broke them and he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people, and they did so. They had a few small fish as well. He gave thanks for them also and told the disciples to distribute them. The people ate and they were satisfied. Afterwards, the disciples picked up seven basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. About 4,000 were present. After Jesus had sent them away, he got into a boat with his disciples, and he went to the region of Dalmanutha. Okay, so Sea of Galilee is like in the northern part of Israel, and Jesus basically just sails across the Sea of Galilee to the place where Jewish people live. He's in like non-Jewish area of Galilee, and now he's sailing across the other side where all the Jewish people are. Now, I imagine at this point, Jesus, he's a good leader, you know, he's sailing away with his disciples, and he's going to do a little bit of like a team retreat, okay? Hey, guys, remember how I told you not to bring bread and you had bread? Let's try not to do that again. You know, hey, guys, remember that one time I did that miracle, and then like the other time I did that miracle? You probably don't because you already forgot, I'll bet. But instead, remember that? Like, I can do anything just about, okay? Like, you just need to be aware of that. You know, he wanted to kind of circle him up, have some team time, probably pray, mostly for himself so he could go, dear God, help me get through this with these men, okay? You know, so they get off on the other side of the lake, and Jesus is approached by the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the Klingons of the ancient world right here, okay? The Pharisees came and they began to question Jesus. And to test him, they asked him for a sign from heaven, which at this point is ridiculous because if you just read Mark's gospel, which doesn't record the whole life of Jesus, just a part of it, what happens is Jesus has actually already done 13 different miracles. And several of those miracles were miracles where it was like the whole town lined up all their sick and like people in need of a miracle outside of Jesus' door, and he just spent all night healing them and doing all that stuff, right? So Jesus has done miracle after miracle after miracle. The idea that someone would be like, Jesus, we're not sure if you are who you say you are, it's pretty ridiculous at this point, okay? It's pretty obtuse for someone to say that now. And so Jesus responds like all of us would respond. He sighed deeply. And I highlight that word because it's a word Mark wrote in Greek, and we don't have a very good word to like capture what he's saying. So the best I can do for you is this. You know when you're crying, and you ain't just crying, you're ugly crying, you know? Okay, I'm the only one? All right, good. Okay, and you know how when you're ugly crying, and every once in a while you have like a sob, and it just comes from like way down deep inside. It's like there's like some black hole in your chest, and it just came up. You know, like, how can they eliminate him off Bachelor? Oh my God. You know, whatever it is, right? You know, and like it just comes deep down inside, okay? That's this word, okay? That's like the level of emotion that's like being drawn out of Jesus. He's so irritated. He's so upset. He's so frustrated. He's so annoyed. He's just so over it at this point with these Pharisees, okay? They are willfully ignoring him and everything he's said and done. And he says, why does this generation ask for a sign? I tell you, I'm done. No sign will be given to it. So then he left them. He got back in the boat with his disciples, and they went over to the other side. Jesus realizes we're not going to be able to get along here. These guys are going to pester us. They're going to bother us. We need to go over to the other side, okay? Now, I need you to stop for just a second and think about, if you're one of the disciples, and you watch Jesus have this altercation just beyond your boat, okay? And you can see that didn't go so good. And Jesus comes back to the boat, and you can tell he's clearly worked up about something, okay? You got a buddy who's upset. when your friend gets back in, what are you going to do? Right? What are you going to do? You're going to like, you know, you want to like put your arm around and be like, hey, man, is everything okay? You know, we doing okay? We cool? You know, what's up? You want to talk about it? You know, you might pop in, you know, some Beyonce, get some boy bye going on there. You know, we're done with these Pharisees. We're over. Man, we are done. You know, you pop in your favorite breakup jam, you know, and you just kind of do that right now. Maybe try and lighten the mood, you know, get some booed up going on in there. And I don't know, whatever your song is, you want to listen to, you're trying to do something to empathize with Jesus, something to make it better, something to do whatever you got to do to kind of just help your friend, right? Here's what the disciples decide would be really good to do. The disciples forgot to bring bread except for one loaf that they had with them in the boat. The loaf, which we should just observe, where do you think that one loaf of bread came from? It's not a trick question. Starts with a J, ends with Jesus. I'm really concerned no one's getting this right now. Jesus, thank you. Okay, good. Oh, man, we got a lot of ground to cover, apparently, on this one. All right. Be careful, Jesus warned. He's trying to turn this into a teaching moment, okay? He captures himself, okay? Be careful, Jesus warned them. Watch out for the yeast. That was like a saying of the time, talking about like the corruption of someone, okay? Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. And the disciples lock in, not on Pharisees and Herod in the messages Jesus is trying to send. They lock in on yeast. Bread, oh shoot, you know, because here's how they respond. They discuss this and they said, Jesus is upset because we forgot to bring bread. Jesus is upset because we have no bread. So, Jesus, I'm sorry, I told Peter to bring another loaf. Just, he forgot. You know how he gets sometimes, you know. He's just so excited, you know. And at this point, Jesus, you remember like 20 years ago, before the NBA Finals, Allen Iverson had this really famous press conference for the Philadelphia 76ers because he missed practice and he got like suspended or was going to get suspended from the team. And he stands up in the podium and he goes, practice? We're talking about practice? Okay, I imagine at this point I would channel Allen Iverson as Jesus and be like, bread? We're talking about bread? You know, like, you guys got to be kidding me. If you've learned nothing about my ministry and nothing about who I am and nothing about what I can do, you should at least know by this point, when I am around, we don't need to worry about bread, okay? We're a regular Panera over here, all right? You do not need to be concerned about bread, okay? I got us covered, all right? Whether you got one loaf or 20 loaves or no loaves, we're going to have enough bread, guys. Don't worry. But Jesus doesn't do that. Because Jesus is committed to going at their pace with grace. Because, yeah, thank goodness, right? Because Jesus is loving. And Jesus is patient. And so here's how the story finishes up. Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them. Now, that word asked is really important because it's the garden variety word that you would use to say, I said something to you, okay? If Jesus had raised his voice, if Jesus had yelled, if Jesus had shouted, if Jesus was trying to like really hammer it home, like, come on, guys, you're a bunch of idiots right now, okay? Mark would have used another word, but he didn't because Jesus is here, and he is just speaking to them. He's trying to teach them something. He's being patient with them, okay? Because patience, going at their pace is great, but if you don't get the with grace part, doesn't feel very patient, right? And so Jesus asks them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? At which point, they hopefully we're all going, no, we do not see or understand, Jesus. Are your hearts hardened? And Peter's probably like a loaf of bread that's been out too long, you know? That no, okay. Do you have eyes that fail to see? Do you have ears that fail to hear? Parents, you use that. Next time your kid needs to clean their room, just it's biblical right there. You know, do you have eyes? Okay. Don't you remember? Okay. Guys, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, the first time I did the feeding a bunch of people miracle, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. Okay, and remember like, I know it's going to be hard, remember like 12 hours ago when I broke the 7 loaves for 4,000 people, how many basketfuls of pieces did you pick up? 7. And then Jesus finishes with, do you still not understand? And this is the point, I think, in relationships where we tend to walk away, right? When we find ourselves dealing with a person and we find ourselves maybe not using this language, probably using a little more colorful language if I'm being really honest about myself, do you still not get it? Do you still not understand? You know, I imagine at this point, if I'm Jesus, I'm just looking for ways to shove the disciples off the boat, you know, like, oh, where did Peter go? I don't know, you know, oh, you know, like, I'm done, right? I'm over with. But not Jesus. Because Jesus is patient. And Jesus is committed to going at their and at your and at my pace with grace. Because that's what patience does. And because that's what love does. I tried to think this week about places where I struggle to be patient. And I imagine for some of you, as you listen to this, that there is a person and their like face is in your mind this whole time, okay? And if so, that's fine. There's your next step. Be patient with that person, all right? You're done. But I think for me, I find that I don't so much have a problem being patient with a person all the time. I have problems being with a particular kind or group of people a lot of the times who kind of fit. We all have like these different categories of people that just kind of annoy us for whatever reason, okay? And I tried to sit back, I tried to think about, so where are some places in my life where I feel like God is trying to cultivate patience inside of me? And so I came up with some for me. Maybe they're good for you. Maybe you've got different ones. If so, that's great. But as we wrap up today, I just want to talk about some places where I think we can practice patience, where we can practice going at people's pace with grace just the way that Jesus did. Okay? Here's place number one. We need to be patient with people's personality quirks. Okay? In the story I told earlier when my wife is asking a bunch of questions, she's not trying to be angry. She's not trying to be mean. She's not trying to be nasty. That's just how God made my wife, right? She asks a bunch of questions about everything. That's just her nature, okay? It's one of her personality quirks. And guess what? I've got them too, okay? I have all kinds of personality quirks, okay? Just watch me straighten things like 6 inches on our coffee table. I'm sure my wife was like, is this guy having a stroke right now? Because he barely even moved it, but it was like a really big deal to him, okay? We all have personality quirks. And you know what? People aren't trying to be evil. That's just the way that God made them, okay? I really hate to be the bearer of bad news to you today. Some of you are married to a person, and they're just always going to drive that way. They're always going to drive that. And it's not because they're evil, and it's not because the devil lives inside of them, and it's not because they think they're Dale. That's just who they are, okay? Here's another one. Some of you, you're with a person, and they're always going to tell stories that way. They're always going to turn the 2-minute story into a 12-minute one. And they're always going to spend 5 minutes on the color shirt that they were wearing and, like, what texture was the floor? And, like, you know, it was 97 was the temperature in Malaysia that day, in case you were wondering. Like, that's just who they are, right? That's their personality quirk. That's how they act. That's part of the way that they do life. And it's not because they're bad. And it's not because they're evil. It's just a personality quirk. And you know what? We should be patient. We should go at their pace with grace, because every annoyance, every quirk, everything I don't understand, guess what? That's an opportunity to love. Here's a second one. We should be patient with people's maturity level. You are going to come into contact with people who aren't at your maturity level, okay? When I was a kid, I was like 6 or 7, whatever age I was, when my dad took the training wheels off of my bike and I was learning how to ride my bike, okay? My dad did what I imagine a lot of dads do, which is we went in the alley back behind our house, and my dad would do that thing where I start to pedal and get a little head of steam, and he's holding the seat the whole way, and then he lets go, and then I fell. And then he did it again. And again, you know, like probably 30 minutes or an hour, I don't know, you know, 7 years, however long it took, okay? He just kept doing that over and over again. Now, after like time 2, when I fell, my dad didn't just like pick up my bike and go, rah, you know, like throw it off on the side, right? You know, like because we understand that's what a psychopath would do, right? Because Wes's problem is he just doesn't have the maturity of skill yet to do that. He's a kid, Larry, okay? Be patient right now, okay? He's just learning. He's just trying to figure it out, okay? You need to just go at his pace. You know, be gentle. Be patient, okay? Now, here's what we do. We encounter that person in our workplace. We encounter that person in our family. We encounter that person we are related to by marriage, okay? And we encounter their immaturity, and we lose it, right? We just go like ballistic, right? Because we just, oh my gosh, how can you act that way? How can you be that way, right? And we fail to realize the whole time that they aren't trying to be immature. Most of the time it's just that no one has showed them how. Because no one was patient. What they probably need to be more mature is they need someone who will be patient with them and help them grow in that direction. Because that's how we grow. That's how we mature. They need someone to go at their pace with grace with them, right? Okay? Christians, if you've been a Christian in the room for like longer than like 10 years, okay? This is a tension we always face as a church and will always face as a church. Because our church is always going to be filled with people at different spiritual maturity levels. And that's what makes our church a great place. The minute it's not, we have a problem, okay? Because our mission is we want to help connect disconnected people with God. People who are not going to be at a high spiritual maturity level. If you're here and you're one of those people, I'm so glad you're here. We launched this church for you to be here, okay? But here's the issue, is what we do is sometimes as Christians, we kind of look down our nose at people. And we get irritated. And while they're sitting in the seat next to us and they're hearing their first message on patience, you're hearing like your 97th message on patience. And in fact, you are totally disobeying my message because you're like, when is this going to be over? Okay, you know, come on, we got to get Cracker Barrel. It's filling up. I can feel it right now, you know, or whatever it is, okay? And we get impatient and we look down on people and we grow resentful. And then we start to grow resentful of like the leadership of our church because it's like, oh, well, we're not deep enough, you know. We grow resentful of just like how we kind of do ministry, right? When we fail to realize all along that the metaphor that God uses to describe his church is a family. That you are brothers and sisters in Christ. And here's what we know about healthy families. Healthy families have people at different maturity levels, don't they? They have people at different spiritual maturity levels and physical maturity levels and emotional and mental maturity levels because that's how families work. And we understand that as I grow and mature as an individual, what happens in a family is I take more and more responsibility and the family becomes less and less about me, okay? I made a really big stink about my Christmas gifts and our family Christmas party at age 8. If you're 88 and you're still doing that, probably got a little bit of a problem right now. You know, like that's not healthy and mature necessarily, right? And so what we understand is, hey, as we kind of grow and mature, we understand we take responsibility for more things and we have the opportunity to love people and be patient with people who right now are still trying to put it together. And that's actually a beautiful thing. Right? When instead of resenting people at a lower maturity level than me, I actually take ownership and responsibility to develop them and to grow them and to lead them and to be a part of a redemptive part of their story, right? That's patience. That's going at their pace with grace. That is being patient with people's maturity level. And that's a beautiful thing. Third area. We need to practice patience when the input doesn't match the output, okay? Tell me if you've ever met a person in your life where you feel like, man, I'm giving them like an 8 effort and I'm getting a 3 return right now. You know, like I feel like I'm just pouring in and pouring in and pouring in and it is not coming together right now. Okay? Patience says, I'm going to go at that person's pace with grace. I got a little bit of news for you. Jesus was probably pouring into his disciples at a higher input level than you are. And Jesus, if anyone ever had a right to be frustrated with the output that he experienced, it was probably Jesus because he put a lot in. And yet what we see is Jesus doesn't throw his disciples off the boat. And Jesus doesn't come to God with his hands open and say, God, why me? You know, like what Jesus does is he is patient and he goes at their pace with grace. And he keeps taking them under his wing, and he keeps developing them, and he keeps pouring into them, and he keeps doing all that he can for them because that's what patience does, because Jesus was committed to going at their pace with grace. Because patience, this is kind of the last thing, patience has a payoff, and the payoff is growth. People don't always grow and change when you're patient with them. But I guarantee you, when you aren't patient with them, they will not. And what is often so true is when I make the decision to go at someone else's pace with grace, over time, that person grows. And that person changes. And that person transforms.
And I know that my story, when I think about places and areas I grew over the course of my life, is because some people in my life who love and care about me deeply were radically, ridiculously, nonsensically patient with me when I didn't deserve it. And because of the grace that they showed me, finally, over time, I grew. And I'll bet I'm not the only one who's listening to this sermon that has that story. Jesus, in this story, they got off the boat, and 8 verses later, Jesus has a conversation with his disciples. And here's what the conversation goes. He asks his disciples, "What about you guys? Who do you say I am?" Jesus is trying to find out, what do the disciples believe about his identity? Do they grasp who he is? Do they grasp his mission? And Peter, speaking on behalf of all the disciples, says, "Well, Jesus, we think you are the Messiah." That's the first time in the whole Gospel of Mark that the disciples say, "Jesus, we think you are God's son. We think you are the king of the world. We think you are the Messiah, the chosen one of God." Which is kind of crazy when you think about the fact that 8 verses earlier, the disciples are like, "Oh, we forgot the bread, you know, gotta get the bread, you know." Because when you're patient with people, they grow. When you're patient with people, they love. They experience love. They experience God's love at work in them. They change. They develop. They grow for the better. Because something amazing happens when you and I decide to go at someone else's pace with grace. And when we view every annoyance as an opportunity for love. And the amazing thing that happens is people feel loved. And if the gospel teaches us anything, is that love is a powerful agent to change and to affect change in this world. You and I have the power to love people well. And it's as simple as the choice to be patient. So let's do it. Father, I thank you. You're patient with us. I thank you that, God, over the 31 years of my life, that there were many points where you could have just decided, "I'm done. I'm wiping my hands. I'm over this. I'm not interested." But Jesus, you didn't. You're patient anyway. You went at my pace with grace. You went at every single person listening to this pace with grace. So Jesus, help us to do that with other people. Jesus, I pray that we would know your love for us, and specifically that we would know your patience for us. And out of that knowledge, we would grow in our love and our patience with other people. For the faces that come to mind right now, for the situations that come into mind right now, help us go at their pace with grace. Help us view the annoyances and inconvenience and frustrations as an opportunity to love. And we pray this in your name.